Chapter 41
3!
Crouched down, Sam threw open the door. Except for moonlight filtering through the ceiling, the conservatory was dark and, separated as it was from the lab area, not raining. Water from the corridor gushed out and began spreading across the floor. Sam and Remy waited, watching. Silence. Nothing moved. Remy whispered,
"Where are they?"
A flashbang thunked into the wall beside the door and landed at their feet. Sam kicked it away with his heel and slammed the door shut. From the other side came a bang. White light flashed through the cracks. Sam opened the door an inch and was this time greeted by the sound of pounding footsteps and the sight of flashlights jostling their way toward them across the conservatory. "Mind if I borrow that?" Sam asked and took Remy's MP5. "When I start shooting, you head right. Take out a window and go for the patio."
"And you?"
"I'm going to bring down the house. Go!" Sam pushed the door open, angled both MP5s at the ceiling, and opened fire. Hunched over, Remy charged toward the patio, the barrel of her Glock flashing orange and bucking in her hand. Knowing the glass itself was probably reinforced, Sam aimed for the support joints near the peak. With a reverberating, elongated cracking sound, the joints gave way. The first plate of glass collapsed inward and tumbled downward, followed by another, then another, crashing through the palm trees and cleaving trellis walls as they went. Voices started shouting in Russian, but almost immediately changed to screams as the first pane struck the floor. Shards of glass shot across the conservatory like shrapnel, ripping through foliage and peppering the walls. Sam, already moving, saw all this out of the corner of his eye. Remy's shots had struck true, shattering one of the wall panes. She was already crouched on the patio, waving for him to hurry. He felt a pluck at his sleeve, then a trio of stings on his face. He put his head down and his arms up, kept running, and leaped through Remy's opening.
"You're bleeding," Remy said.
"Maybe I'll end up with a dueling scar. Come on." He handed her back one MP5, then turned and ran for the hedges. Arms held before him like a wedge, he bulldozed through the tangle of branches into open air, then reached back in and pulled Remy through. On the other side of the hedge, they could hear the shattering of glass every few seconds as the remainder of the conservatory roof continued to collapse. Voices, some in English and some in Russian, called to one another. Similarly, from the main house and what Sam and Remy guessed was the party area, came a cacophony of voices from Bondaruk's guests. Sam and Remy crouched down in the grass to catch their breath and get their bearings. To their right, 50 yards away, was the estate's cliffside wall. Behind them lay the west wing, the main part of the mansion, and the east wings. Directly ahead, 100 feet away, stood a line of closely set pine trees fronted by barberry bushes. Sam checked his watch. 4 a.m., a few hours before dawn.
"Let's steal one of the cars," Remy said, taking off her shoes, snapping off their high heels, then settling them back on her feet. "We drive like hell for Sevastopol and find some place with lots of people. Bondaruk wouldn't dare do anything in public."
"Don't count on it. Besides, that's too obvious. By now, they've got the perimeter locked down. Don't forget, the only way he'll know it's us is from the camera footage or by putting our pictures in front of the guy back in the lab. Right now, all he knows is all hell is breaking loose. Better we maintain that mystery."
"How?"
"Retrace our steps. The last place they'll check is the way we came in."
"Back through the tunnel? And then what? Swim for the boat?"
Sam shrugged. "I hadn't gotten to that part yet. Still, I think it's our best chance." Remy gave it 5 seconds of thought, then said, "Smuggler's tunnel it is. Unless we spot a helicopter or a tank somewhere along the way." "You find me a tank, Remy Fargo, and I'll never drive over the speed limit again."
"Promises, promises."
Of all the unknowns about Bondaruk's estate, 2 were of the greatest concern to Sam and Remy. 1, did Bondaruk have guard dogs? 2, how many gunmen did he have, either on the property or in reserve, ready to come when called?
Though they didn't know the answer to either of these questions, they decided to assume the worst and get out while confusion still reigned, and before their host had a chance to muster whatever hounds, human or canine, he had at his disposal. Hunched over, they sprinted in bursts to the end of the hedges, paused to make sure the way was clear, then dashed across an open patch of lawn to the line of barberry bushes. Sam took off his tuxedo jacket and gave it to Remy, then dropped to his belly and wriggled through the thorny branches and onto the narrow strip of grass before the pine grove. Remy joined him a few moments later and started to take off his jacket. "Keep it," he said. "Temperature's dropping." She smiled. "Always the gentleman." "Sam, your arms." He looked down. The barberry thorns had shredded his shirt sleeves. The white material was streaked and dotted with blood. "Looks worse than it is, but this shirt is going to get us caught." They crawled a few feet into the pine trees. Sam dug into the earth, grabbed a handful of dirt, and began rubbing it over his shirt front, sleeves, and face. Remy did his back, then her own arms and face. Sam couldn't help but smile. "Looks like we've been to the cocktail party from hell." "Not far off. Look. There." 100 yards east across the lawn, they saw a trio of flashlights appear around the corner of the house and begin moving along the wall toward them. "Hear any dogs?" Sam asked.
"No."
"Let's hope it stays that way. Come on." They moved deeper into the trees, ducking under and sidestepping low-hanging branches until they came across a narrow north-south game trail. They took it, heading north toward the stables. The pine grove was untouched old growth, 100 or more years old, which was both a curse and a blessing. While the intertwined boughs frequently forced them to crawl and crab-walk, it also provided perfect cover. Several times as they stopped to catch their breath, they watched his guards moved along the other side of the tree line, not 30 feet away, but so dense was the foliage that their flashlight beams penetrated only a few feet.
"Eventually, they'll send someone in," Sam whispered. "But with luck, we'll be long gone before that." "How far to the stables?"
"On a straight line, 1/4 mile. But this grove zigzags, so it's probably double that. Ready?"
"Whenever you are."
For the next 20 minutes, they picked their way along the game trail, pausing every dozen paces to look and listen. Frequently, they saw flashlights or shadowed figures moving around the estate grounds, sometimes hundreds of yards away, sometimes so close that Sam and Remy had to lie flat, not daring to breathe or move as the guards scanned the trees before moving on. Finally, the grove began to thin around them, and soon the game trail opened into a clearing of grass across which they could see the south wall of the stables. Sam wriggled ahead, did a quick reconnaissance, then returned to Remy. "The party lawn is off to our right. The guests are gone, but all the cars are still in the parking lot."
"Bondurek's probably got them inside, lined up for interrogation," Remy murmured.
"Wouldn't be surprised. I didn't see any posted guards. Except for one, and as bad luck would have it, he's standing at the corner of the stables right beside the entrance."
"Any chance of taking him out?"
"Not unless I can levitate. His head's on a swivel. I wouldn't get halfway across the clearing before he heard me." "I do, however, have an idea," he explained.
"How far?" she asked.
60, 70 yards.
"Over the stable roof, no less. It's a long shot, if you'll pardon the pun."
They spent a few minutes rummaging around the trees until they had a pile of 6 golf ball-sized stones. Sam picked up the first one, crab-walked to the edge of the clearing, waited for the guard to look away, then popped up and hurled the stone. It sailed in a high arc over the stable roof. Sam popped back down and scurried back.
Silence. "Miss," Remy whispered.
Sam grabbed another stone and repeated the process. Another miss. Then a third, and then a fourth. He picked up the 5th stone, shook it in his hand like a pair of dice, then held it before Remy's lips. "For luck." She rolled her eyes, but dutifully blew on the stone. He crawled out, waited for his moment, then hurled the stone. 2 seconds passed. From the parking lot came the sound of breaking glass, followed by the rhythmic honking of a car alarm.
You sank someone's battleship, Remy said.
The alarm had an immediate and dramatic effect, starting with the guard at the stable door, who turned and sprinted toward the parking lot. Voices from other parts of the estate began shouting to one another. Sam and Remy bolted for cover and sprinted for the wall, reaching it in under 10 seconds. Bent at the waist now, they slid down its length to the corner. Ahead of them, they saw 5 or 6 guards rush headlong across the party area and through the hedges.
Go!
Sam rasped. They stepped out around the corner and through the door into the stables. They weren't 2 steps inside when a massive dark form rose up before them. Sam pushed Remy left, then rolled right. The horse, a jet black Arabian stallion standing at least 16 hands high, reared up, its hooves clawing the air before Sam. It let out a deep-chested snort, then slammed back to the ground, galloped down the alleyway, and disappeared into an open stall door. Behind Sam, the door opened. The guard saw Remy first and wheeled on her, his MP5 coming up. Before he could utter a word, Sam was there, driving a right cross into his temple. He stumbled sideways and fell to the ground. As Remy scooped up his gun, Sam closed the door and dropped the crossbar into place. Outside, they could hear boots pounding on gravel.
So much for a stealthy exit, Sam muttered.
At this point, I'll settle for any exit at all, Remy replied. They turned and sprinted for the tack room.